This is the sound of a University of Phoenix student earning a business degree. What you don't hear is the University of Phoenix student studying in between shifts in his two-bedroom apartment while his children sleep. What you don't hear is this student defying the odds to succeed. Shouldn't that student be the candidate you take a longer look at? University of Phoenix. We rise. Learn more at phoenix.edu.
This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. Today joining us is an exciting young talent, Mickey Daniel, a young Texas cowgirl and a rising star in the music world, will be joining us around the Campfire Cafe. And then we'll be joined by Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. Jim is not even quite back from Washington, and he's going to bring us some updates on events of interest to trail users. Our show today is brought to you by our great sponsors at the General Store. You'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle in the General Store at equestrianlegacy.net. When we come back, we'll be talking with Mickey Daniel.
My mama set me up there when I was only 5. She said, smile pretty, have fun, and hang on with your thighs. But she did not prepare me for the way that pony walked. I got scared and my face turned white, and I said, mama, make it stop. But mama, she just smiled, leaned back against the fence, said, ride 'em cowgirl, show 'em your big curly smile, whatever you do, honey, don't you let go, show those cowboys a thing or two, they'll be drop judges watching you, you're the best darn cowgirl here, you know, come on, give that pony a little spurt, hang on tight, hon, he's all yours, and ride 'em cowgirl. I was 10 when we moved on to a nice-sized piece of land. Daddy bought me a pony, and I've been hooked since then. I climbed on and reckoned I would give this thing a whirl. Daddy smiled and hollered, ride 'em cowgirl. I won't ever forget my very first rodeo, even though I was watching from the stand. That was when I saw a lady ride a wild bucking bronco, and I knew right then that I was gonna learn to ride 'em cowgirl. Show 'em your big curly smile, whatever you do, honey, don't you let go. Show those cowboys a thing or two, they'll be drop dead just watching you. You're the best darn cowgirl here, you know. Come on, give that pony a little spurt, hang on tight, on, he's all yours, and ride 'em cowgirl. Bronco stud, his name was Sundown King, and cowboy kindly warned me about his bucking game. I climbed on and breathing deep, I thought back to the day when I rode my first pony ride and heard my mama say, ride 'em cowgirl, show 'em your big curly smile, whatever you do, honey, don't you let go. Show 'em all a thing or two, they'll be drop dead just watching you, you're the best darn cowgirl here, you know.
Well, that's Mickey Daniels, Ride 'em Cowgirl, and Mickey is just an outstanding young lady. I've enjoyed talking with her in some of our pre-show interviews. Mickey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Gary, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You disappeared for a minute, but you're back.
I'm sorry. I'm back.
That's
I'm back.
You're back. You're back. Well, you're one of the neatest young ladies that I've talked with in a long time. Just so interesting to visit with you, and such a trooper, because, you know, you and I were talking a little bit before the show started about a horse injury. And how did that happen?
Well, I was actually asked to be in a film, and they had me billed as a stunt rider, which I'm not. And I was out early that morning practicing my handstand on my sweet little mare in this unfamiliar pasture. And when I dismounted out of the handstand, I must have landed in a hole, I think, because the grass was kind of high and couldn't really see the ground too clearly. And I wound up shattering my ankle and part of my leg, and I had to have pretty much reconstructive surgery to put it back together. That was in June.
Mm-mm-mm. But you're doing okay, and you said you had your neat camouflage boot on right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Can't beat camo.
Can't beat camo. But anyway, let's introduce you to the audience and tell us a little bit about yourself, Mickey. You know, how you grew up and how you got started with horses, because obviously people already know you're a horse person because of your handstands.
All right. Well, I'm 18, and all of my life I've been raised on a small farm in Texas, and my family kind of grew everything we ate, and I remember growing up being real young, and after we'd finish our chores on the weekend, we were allowed to go inside and watch a movie, and we don't have TV, we only have movies, you know, and my parents invested in a lot of movies from the 40s and 50s for us. So I grew up watching Roy Rogers and Gene Autry every weekend, and that's what got me started in the music. But ever since I can remember, I've always loved horses, and I got my first horse at 5. And ever since then, I've always had a horse, and they're a big part of my life, and I love them dearly.
Well, and I think you do some training too, don't you?
I do, and that's what I really, really love to do. I love to train horses. I intern with a horseman, a local horse trainer down here, named Chad Brindley with Bombproof Horsemanship, and he's a fabulous trainer. He does things with horses that, you know, you just wouldn't believe you could do. And he lets me come down there and hang out with him. Unfortunately, I haven't been in a while since my injury.
Right.
But I've been getting to spend a lot of time with him and learning his tricks of the trade, and I hope that's what I get to do for the rest of my life, you know, is train horses. I trained my own. And whenever someone that lives locally that, you know, wants help with their horses, I'm always the first to say, hey, I'd love to help you.
goodness. Well, the nice thing is you can combine your horsemanship with your music.
Oh, so true.
Yeah, so, and we're going to talk about more talents that you have in just a little bit, too. But how did you get started into music?
Into music?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good question. I think my mom put me in piano at 5. Yeah, I was 5 years old, and she put me in piano. And I started playing piano, and of course, you know, that first, like, 2 weeks was super exciting. And then from then on, all of a sudden, we had to practice. And I wasn't quite so sure about that until I turned, like, 11. And I'd been watching Roy Rogers and Gene Autry for a little bit, and boy, those guys played a mean guitar. And suddenly, piano wasn't quite so thrilling, and guitar was the new hot topic. So I moved on to guitar, and I think I really started learning to play it when I was 13. But I had already started learning to yodel and to sing at 11. So my singing was a little bit ahead of my guitar playing. And then I think just as time grew on, I really started enjoying the practice more. So I found myself practicing a lot, you know, singing and playing guitar. And now I've also added several other instruments, and I don't know. I just love music. Music's a great way to share you know, a passion with somebody else and
right.
make everybody happy.
Right. Well, you've got a great voice, and we're going to play several of your songs for folks to enjoy today. But at what point did you decide that you wanted to be an entertainer and a performer, not just sing?
Well, you know, I don't ever remember making that decision. I think it just happened. I was 11 years old when I had my first, you know, performance with a microphone.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't scared. I was just as excited as I could be. And I think stage fright actually came a couple years later. You know, it caught up with me, and I got nervous about it. And Mom was like, "What is wrong with you? You've been doing this for a while." But I think when I was 13 or 14, I made the decision, you know, to stick with it and just to travel and share my music with other Western music lovers. And I've been doing it ever since.
Okay. Well, you've got a great CD that you've done called Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And we want to take just a quick break and listen to, I guess, the title cut from that, I've Just Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And when we come back, Mickey, let's talk a little bit about some of the people that may have been an influence in your music. But we want to share this song. It's I've Just Gotta Be a Cowgirl. It's from Mickey's CD, Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And we're talking with Mickey Daniel on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I want a hand-carved belt and a silver buckle set and a Palomino pony to ride. A Stetson sombrero with 5Xs in the bend and a pair of Shipley spurs and a great big patch of land. A pair of Justin boots I'll have with 7 rows of stitches. And then I'll get that flowered shirt for which I've been a-itching. And when they holler, ride 'em, girl, I know that I'm really pitching. 'Cause I've just gotta be a cowgirl. Western guy I know, and when I've got him landing, I'll wrap him in my lariat and love him single-handed. And I'll rope the moon and stars and have my old Ford take up branding. 'Cause I just gotta be a cowgirl.
Just gotta be a cowgirl.
I've Just Gotta Be a Cowgirl, and that's from Mickey's CD, Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And Mickey, who were some of your influences besides Gene and Roy in music?
Well, ones that I didn't get to meet were legendary singer-songwriters like Cyndi Walker and Dean Martin, Bob Wills and Bing Crosby.
Wow.
But I have some, yeah. I liked Wing, I liked the cowboy stuff, and I liked big bands. And, you know, I just didn't have any complaints when it came to that old music. But I have some, you know, modern day mentors that really influenced me and still do. And I'd like to thank especially Janet McBride, because she's the lady that, you know, handed me the microphone the very first time. And she's also the lady that taught me to yodel, and she is the lady who convinced me that writing songs is a good idea. And she always was the one that pushed me to write. So she's probably been my biggest mentor, but I've had a lot of great people in my life. I've been really blessed to have met some really fabulous musicians and make some wonderful friendships with them, such as Marvin Odell, who, you know, produced Gotta Be a Cowgirl for me. And
right.
Without Marvin, there was no CD. Marvin was the whole reason that I even made that CD. So a big thank you to him. And then, you know, I draw inspiration from Dave Stamey and Mary Kay and Belinda Gale and Dave Alexander. They're all fabulous. There's so many, you know, there's so many wonderful Western music musicians that, you know, have inspired me or influenced me in some way, you know, along the way. But just a big thank you to all of them, you know, for...
Yeah, then there are so many great artists out there that I guess it's hard to just, you don't want to overlook anybody, but you've just listed some great ones. And a lot of those folks have become friends, and they certainly are talented people. Were you ever tempted to do any other type of music besides the Western and the Western swing?
Not once, honestly. Never once. And I think it's because that's the music I was raised, you know, raised in.
Mm-hmm.
I started off, you know, at the very beginning playing classical music. And I don't even know how old I was really before I even knew that there were other genres. You know, Western music was all I knew. And I know we'd, you know, be driving in the car, and we'd stop at a stoplight, and somebody would be playing something else, and I'd be like, what is that? I was like, oh, you know, some people think that's music. But I have expanded. So I do Western, and I yodel a little bit, and I do Western swing, and I also do gospel. And that's kind of, you know, that's my niche. That's what I like, and that's what I do. That's what I've always done.
we're so glad that you are. And you know, we didn't mention earlier, but you've received the Wrangler Award. You were the 2013 Western Music Association Crescendo Award winner. And so you've already got a great start and some really great recognition from your peers for your music. So that's
well,
just
thank you.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, once again, a big thanks to Marvin Odell, because, you know, he produced the album that, you know, helped bring both of those awards, you know, to be a possibility. And, you know, a big thank you to the Lord, too, because he's the one who gave me, you know, the gift to share. But, yeah, it's been a fun journey, and it's pretty cool. It's fun to, you know, see what kind of things and what kind of people I meet along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
one of the things that I have become more aware of lately, I guess, for a while it seemed like there was a different generation that mm-hmm. was performing and singing the Western music, but it seems like there is a whole new class of young performers that are coming up. We, you know, you're on the show. We had Kristen Harris on recently, and, you know, we have hope to have some more of our young Western performers coming up. But
it's nice to find other youth that are interested in preserving our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
It's not prevalent in today's society.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm back here in Nashville, Tennessee, and we're Country Music USA, Music City USA
right.
back here. But we've got to bring more of this Western music back east, and more venues and opportunities, I think, for people to really enjoy and experience the great music that is still going on in the Western and cowboy world. So we want to take a break. We want to listen to another one of your songs, I Went Riding. And there's just some really fun songs on here, so I'm going to encourage people to be sure and pick up Got to Be a Cowgirl. And let me just go ahead and ask, Mickey, where can they get your CD?
Well, they can get it on my website, www.mickeydaniel.com. That's MikeyDaniel.com.
Okay.
You can find it on iTunes or CD Baby, and pretty much if you just Google it, you'll find it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Got to Be a Cowgirl is the album, and I Went Riding is the song we're going to listen to. And when we come back, we're going to talk about not only are you a singer and songwriter, but you have a novel. And so we want to talk a little bit about that when we come back. But again, we're
all
talking
right.
with Mickey Daniel, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I was a blonde little girl, cowboy hat and curls, smiles wreathed in sunshine. A pony, a Mustang, spirits never tamed, childhood memories of mine. And I went riding while I was singing a Roy Rogers song, loping after restless doggies. Boys, I could do this all day long. Saddle a pony, keep calm or he'll boast, he's still just a little bit green. I learned to swing a good rope, praying to God and hoping my life would never change. And I went riding while I was singing a Roy Rogers song, loping after restless doggies. Boys, I could do this all day long. Cross fingers, good luck riding horses that bucked. I hope that I would do just fine. Fingers twisted in mane, bareback and rope rein, childhood memories of mine. And I love to go riding while I was singing a Gene Autry song, loping after restless doggies. Boys, I could do this all day long. Saddle a pony, keep calm or he'll bawl teeth, still just a little bit green. I learned to swing a good rope, praying to God and hoping my life would never change. And I went riding. Along, I was Annie Oakley, and I
I Went Riding, Mickey Daniel. And go out and get that CD at mickeydaniel.com. Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And, you know, Mickey, on Saturday nights on the Nashville Network, they still play those old westerns.
And, oh, do they really?
They do. And, you know, I just love watching Gene and Roy and Dale and and Frog. And, you know, one of the things, I don't think when I was younger and watching those, I realized what musical productions that they did, particularly in the Roy Rogers. Yeah, I mean, they were big productions. I mean, you know, occasionally he was riding on Trigger. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine how amazing those musicians really must have been? Because they didn't have the technology we have today where, you know, they can, you know, play it through 100 times and copy and paste the good parts and toss the rest. You know, they had to make it all the way through a song and it be just spot on. Their musicianship level, you know, had to be so high. It's just, I watch those movies and I just get chills because I just know that those musicians are incredible, you know.
Well, they were, and they were quite the Broadway type production, and particularly in a lot of the Roy Rogers movies that he did. But yeah, but at that time, the westerns were the big draw at the theater. And I think there's kind of a comeback that's going on.
You were
talking just a little bit ago about the fact that you were going to be a stunt rider in a movie. What movie was that? I didn't ask that.
Well, it was actually more of a personal film that some friends and ours were making. They were going to enter this film into a filmmaking contest. And the category that they drew was Western musical. And so I was, you know, supposed to be a part of that. And as you can tell, I didn't actually get to be a part of the Western itself. They wound up having to rewrite the play, you know, for something else. But I did get to do part of the music.
Well, that's great. That is great. Well, and I know that there are several Westerns that are out there that are being worked on, and Kickstarter or Indiegogo are some crowdfunding sources that people are using now today to help get things done. So I hope to see more of those. I hope to see more of those that are brought to TV or to the big screen soon. But talking about the big screen, you have a book that you've written. And that's Girls and Gunsmoke. And how did that come about? And tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, okay. Well, about the same time that I started, you know, getting really into the music thing, I also have always loved stories. I love to tell stories, and I love to write stories. And I started writing several years ago. Girls and Gunsmoke was inspired by some true events that actually, you know, happened in the 1800s when, you know, people were moving west in the United States. There was a land of opportunity and fortune, and what people didn't realize, or they did realize, but, you know, they didn't necessarily think it would pertain to them, or they were willing to take the chance of the hardships and, you know, the dangers that came along with, you know, a land of new opportunities. And my book kind of capitalizes on a wagon train that was headed west and was massacred. And the three main characters of the story, Dusty, Faith, and Majesty, are based off of true characters that are true people that I read about in old diaries. And the girls were the only survivors, except for their two brothers from their family's wagon train. And one of them is vengeance bound and decides to go after the men that waylaid their wagon train. And the other two kind of go along with it, you know, to hold her back. So it's a story of basically the moral of the story is the freedom that forgiveness can bring.
Wow.
But I have to say that a big thank you to the lady that motivated me to get my novel published. Her name is Joyce Boy, and she was a private investigator and a journalist, and she's been really pushing for this book to come out for a while. So a big thank you to her for helping me get it, you know, out there.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Well, and I think I understand Majesty is the one that was bent on vengeance.
That's right.
Yeah.
She's a Texan, and she's you know, her blood boils, and she got a little bit, you know, revved up about the fact that, you know, her family was wiped out, and I think the other two kind of understood a little bit, you know, better the consequences that her, you know, vengeance would bring about. But I think Majesty, you know, all she could see was red, so she was fixing to go take care of the problem herself.
Well, now, where can people get this book?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, they can get it on its website, girlsandgunsmoke.com.
Okay.
Or my personal website, mickeydaniel.com. Either way, it's available. And if they order one right now, before October, they'll get, there's a sale going on. It's like a pre-order special. So it's only $15, including shipping.
Wow. So they can go and order the book at your website, and you have a website for the book.
That's correct. Girlsandgunsmoke.com.
Girlsandgunsmoke.com. Well, we're going to encourage people to pick that book up and support you, and as well as Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And you've just got a lot going on for an 18-year-old.
I do. I've got good parents.
Well, that's good. That is good. That's. But let me ask you, Mickey, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What would you like to be doing 5 years from now?
That's a wonderful question, and it's so hard to answer because I really don't know. But, you know, I love horses so much, and I really find a peace, you know, training them, you know, working with them, spending time with them. And what I'd really like to do is I'd really like to, you know, continue my music and still perform, but I'd like to work at a ranch and train horses. That's where I see myself.
Wow. Well, you know, you can do it all. And
That's right.
You can do it all, and you know, our friend Junie Fisher has a great career as a musician, and she takes Silk along with her quite often, and is competitive. So, you know, you can do a lot of different things, but you are just an outstanding young lady. I am so excited to have been able to meet you through Equestrian Legacy Radio. And look forward to it. I believe you have a new album that you're working on right now as well.
Oh, I do. It's really exciting. It's really exciting because I've loved, you know, Western swing, and I'm having the opportunity to work with Dave Alexander, and he's producing this album. It's going to be half original and half Western swing classics from the 20s and 30s, with a couple of gospel songs. And I'm really excited about this project. This is going to be fun. I think we're hoping it'll come out in the next month.
Oh, that's great. Well, will you let us know when that happens so we can help
promote
that for you? Yeah, we'd love to do that. And you are just such a joy and a pleasure to talk with. You know, I'm looking forward to following your career and hopefully having you back on to visit with us again.
I'd love that. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, so happy to have you. And again, the website is mickeydaniel.com, and that's mickeidaniel.com. Order the CD there. Follow Mickey on Facebook. And she's just a joy to visit with. And Mickey, I think I mentioned to you earlier, we're really excited on Equestrian Legacy Radio to introduce a new program that will be starting October the 12th on Sundays at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that is a program that is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And so Belinda will be hosting that show, and it will be Western gospel music, and she'll be interviewing folks. I wouldn't be surprised if she talked to you sometime on that show.
That sounds fabulous. I can't wait to hear it. Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale.
Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. So we'll be promoting that a little bit more through the website and Facebook soon. But we want to close this segment of the show with another song from Gotta Be a Cowgirl. And this was, and I told you, my dad's favorite hymn, and that's How Great Thou Art. And thank you for including that on your album, and we look forward to hearing the next one that comes out. So, Mickey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to be talking with Jim McGarvey with Backcountry Horsemen of America. We come back, but you're listening to How Great Thou Art by Mickey Daniel, and you are listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. Thanks, Mickey.
Sings my song, my Savior. thou art.
Jim McGarvey is chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America and is a regular with our programming on our Saddle Up America show. And Jim is en route back from Washington. And so, Jim, thanks for taking the time to join us on the call today.
Well, glad to be here, Gary. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate it. Kind of give us an update. I know you've had a busy week.
Well, we sure have. Just coming back from Washington, September 3rd was the 50th anniversary date of the Wilderness Act, and this week was Wilderness Week in Washington, D.C. There's celebrations all over the country, but the one in Albuquerque, I guess, is bigger. But this one was in Washington, D.C., so it had a lot of heft there. And Backcountry Horsemen were one of the sponsors. And it was kind of interesting. We often, because in the alphabetical listing, Backcountry hits pretty much to the top in the list of names. And so there was a list of names of about, well, there's 12, I think, major the bigger sponsors. And so you had the Pew Charitable Trust, the Wilderness Society, the Sierra Club, But at the top of the list was the Backcountry Horsemen of America. So I do have to tell everyone that I think the Sierra Club and the rest of them put a little more money in than we did, for sure. But alphabetically, we were at the top there. And we were probably There were two horse groups there, Backcountry Horsemen, and the other ones are Great Broads of the Wilderness, and it's a group of women. That's their name, and they were there too, and they're a lot of fun, and they petitioned and worked to keep the trails open too. So there might be a fun folks to get on your show, but yeah, the Great Broads of the Wilderness. So,
I've got to put that one down. We have had Hags with Dags on before, so I thought that was pretty cool too.
But it was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and some of our folks are still up there. But on Monday, the Wilderness Society and put on a day long seminar with people from the agencies, the Park Service, and that, and the history of the wilderness, and it was really well done. And then Tuesday was. All the organizations were. It was Tuesday and Wednesday to go up on the hill, Capitol Hill, talk to congressmen and visit agency heads, and we were really pretty active with Randy Rasmussen that's been on before, and Alan Hill,
right.
And Cindy, and two of our founders, Ken and Phyllis Osk, were up there, and two more folks from Montana, Mac and Connie Long, and Connie's the chairman from Montana, our original state. So we had, mm-hmm. Had a couple of folks that helped us in Washington near there. American Hiking Society was there too with us. But we saw 11 congressmen, and we mostly talked about the bill that we're pushing with the Wilderness Society, National Trail Stewardship Act that we've been talking about, the disrepair of the Forest Service trails. So we're looking for co-sponsors. Now that gives the bill heft. Catch his attention, and
right.
I think of the 11 we talked to, we may have got all 11 here. I know four that I talked to. I just got my last email here a little bit ago saying yes, we're glad to sign on. So we're excited about that. And then equally important, and sometimes maybe more so, we talked to. We had some really great meetings. I did get to meet the head of the Forest Service, which I knew before, but. Just a really brief meeting, but I talked to, we had an hour-long meeting with the director, Joe Mead, of Recreation and Heritage, which is the trails, and his folks. They were on a conference call from people even from Idaho, where they have the trails headquarters in a way out there. And it's interesting that the theme, I'll tell you the other agencies we talked to, but the theme is increasing the use of the trails and tourism and recreation, getting folks out in the woods. And so they're all, it's all oriented towards that, but with conservation at the same time. So, it's go out there, but take care of the place also. And
right.
So we had a good meeting there. They're our big partners forever. And Then we had the opportunity, we met with the director of the National Park Service, Jonathan Jarvis. And that's, talk about something that's hard to meet, but we met with him for an hour also. And his theme was, you know, people, getting people out. Of course, they do have a lot of, excuse me, a lot of traffic and a lot of business in the national parks coming through. But they also, we talked about trails and that usage there, and I like him a lot. I'd seen him on the news some and what have you following that. And then later that day, we signed at a ceremony at the National Park Service building, a memorandum of understanding for 5 years, which we have, which points out that describes what we do and what the National Park Service does on their behalf to work together. And what it does, it helps us when we're in the parks and we're with at the ranger level and the the recreation manager level, if they know the national organization in Washington, we have an agreement with them, then it just smooths the the skids right away. It's okay, you guys have already been checked out,
right?
Because we have one with the Forest Service and we're renewing one with the Bureau of Land Management. So we had good meetings with the National Park Service, and then Bureau of Land Management, we met with the director of National Landscape Conservation, and again, it's conservation, but getting people out on the Bureau of Land Management. They have 245 million acres, so
wow.
And they have a kind of a more diverse. They have more off-road vehicles and four-wheelers and mountain bikes and motorized mountain bikes, and so they have a bit of a different clientele, a different mix. But they want to encourage. They surround communities. I mean, there's towns out west that you go out of the city limits and it's the Bureau of Land Management, and so they want to help the communities and this kind of initiative there. So, and horses being one of them. So all the time we're talking about horses and but trails in general, and with horses always the back of our mind. And we had various other meetings. I do want to say a couple of things that was interesting. It was all interesting, but a couple of highlights was on Tuesday night, the Wilderness Week, Pew Charitable Trust and Wilderness Society knows, they had a gathering, kind of buffet cocktail party thing at the Smithsonian. And the director of the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History was there, kind of a young guy. And he's a paleontologist. I thought he says he has 400 full-time scientists working for him. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Just to think about that, kind of staggering. But he said they had a exhibition of photographs from amateurs, professionals, and students. And there was a big contest this past year, too. And they brought in some of the students and some of the folks were there. The students were a lot of fun, everybody cheered them when they got the award, and so, but it was really well done, and, being at the Smithsonian, then the next day, so Wednesday, then last night was the a banquet, and they had this probably, it was 4 or 5 senators and 6 or 8 congressmen, along with all the people that were sponsors, and all the different organizations that are in the wilderness push, if you will, and they gave an award to special award to the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. He's put in more wilderness acreage in the past decade and a half than all of Nevada, nearly all of Nevada. But he's been a big champion there, so he got time to speak and to the folks, and then. Other folks talked that were that go back in time, so it was good to hear everybody. But it was well. I can say this for the horse community, your listeners, that there were 10 of us up there talking about horses. So working with the agencies and Congress, and so they're really starting to know we're on the avenue. We're pushing that more and more, and that we're the defender of the trails for horses.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. Well, it and before the show started today, I was just kind of thinking, there's been a lot of conversation through social media in the last couple of weeks. You know, we did a show with you, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, where we brought up the question, is riding on our public lands a right or a privilege? And there's been a lot of talk on social media about that. Some of the questions that have come up occasionally have been, and by the way, people are pretty strong in their opinions one way or the other on that topic. But some question has come up a time or two about, you know, what is Backcountry Horsemen of America's role in all of this? And, you know, people are aware of the fact that BCHA gets out and they work on the trails and help improve the trails. But to us a little bit about the legislative process and why what you were doing in Washington is important to trail riders.
Well, the 2 years ago, some of our members in Wyoming took some staff members of the Congressman Cynthia Lummis out in the Bridger Teton National Forest and Wilderness to show them the condition of the trails. In the east, we have the eastern pine bark beetle, and it's been going for 20 years, and it's actually kind of peaked out and dropping its viciousness off now, but out west, they're getting theirs, and so that, along with fires, the dryness, and everything that's on the news, caused a lot of damage. And so the two other congressmen joined in, and we had the General Accountability Office study that showed that of the 158,000 miles of Forest Service trails, only about a third of them are maintained to standard, and they're going back to nature. And the deeper in the backcountry are, the more they're going back to nature. And
right.
A lot of people go in the wilderness, like Bob Marshall and a lot of these, you know, famous wildernesses, but and national forests. But they'll often stay on what they call the mainline trails, or you know, that are, you know, go to the big sites. But if you're a hunter or fishing, it's these trails that are closing, and they're lost forever. So with that, we worked the Wilderness Society, and we got a House bill put together. You know, of course, written by staffers in Congress, but we've talked to the Forest Service about this, and they're watching it closely. But what it does, four main things. It makes a common platform for the Forest Service to work with volunteers, because there's 155 forests, and as somebody says, like 155 separate kingdoms. As long as the forest supervisor follows the rules and regulations and laws, it's sort of he can run his household the way he wants to. And
right.
Often it should be that way, because, you know, our Chattahoochee forest here, or the Cherokee in Tennessee, is not like, you know, the Beaver Deer Lodge, you know, in Montana. You know,
right.
There are some differences. And so you got to look at it and the traffic and the accessibility. And so if you're near an urban area, you get a whole different kind of clientele. But there's a great difference in how they use volunteers. And there's reluctance sometimes, and so we've got a list of commonalities that to implement. And now you would think, well, the chief forester, the head of the Forest Service, could just say, "Guys, I want this done in 6 months." But it goes easier if Congress says, "We want this done in 6 months." It's really over a 3-year period, I think. And but they've got a really aggressive table of changes. That's what we discussed. Yesterday was this great list of changes they've got planned, and implementation and timeline, and so pushing hard on it. And this should be on our website, a copy of the bill. It's still in draft. Well, no, it's in, it might change. But we've got the sponsors. There's going to be a hearing probably after the election. And so the funny thing, the Senate race is so close that no senators are signing on anything for anybody. So kind of lay low there to win this election, where Congress is, you know, kind of a different deal. More everybody, you know, got a bigger majority, not a razor thin. A couple of other things in is off-duty fire crews, utilizing them more, which used to be the case 15, 20 years ago. Now the fires have boomed, but there are times where the fire crews, you know, depending on the geography and the climate where they're at, they can do some work out there. And often it aids in getting to the fires that might happen in the summer. Another thing that's really kind of important and interesting, there are some, it's in the language in the bill says, 9 to 15 landscapes, priority landscapes, they call it, to be taken care of. The Bridger Teton, you know, where the first ride went through a couple of years ago, is a priority landscape that's an important place. I mean, if you're in Bridger Teton, you turn around, there's the, you know, Grand Tetons right there. It's one of those great landscapes. And the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, there's some places that are so remote and so rugged, or just sort of off the radar, if you will, that they've gotten really bad. And so the chief will pick, his people will pick, 9 to 15, and report back to Congress in 3 years what they've done. And he gets to pick whatever ones he wants. But so that's one. And then the other one is a test idea, and that if for outfitters, to be an outfitter, you know, pack-in hunters or canoeing or whatever your line of business is, you pay a fee, and it's based on different criteria, but there's a cost. The cost of doing business on the public land, it's a kind of important cost to the outfitter. And so they're going to test plan to see if outfitters do work, volunteer, well, it's not volunteer work, but do work on the trails then and other facilities, then they get credit against the cost of their outfitter's license. And so
right.
It's a test. And Congress wants to report back on that. So that's the main line there.
Okay.
On how 486.
All right. Well, we want to take just a quick break. And when we come back, Jim, I'd like to talk a little bit about a bill that's been pretty controversial in the last week or so, and that's the H.R. 5204. And how that might relate to trail use for everybody. But we're going to take a quick break, and we're talking with Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. We'll take a few phone calls during the next segment if you'd like, and you can call in at 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396. And when we'll come back, we'll talk more about H.R. 5204. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
This is the last cowboy song. The end of a 100-year waltz. Their voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost. Now he rides a feedlot and he clerks in a market on weekends selling tobacco. And his dreams of tomorrow, surrounded by fences, he'll dream tonight of when fences weren't here. This is the last cowboy song. It's the end of a 100-year waltz. And their voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost. Charlie Russell, he showed us how he looked on canvas. And old Teddy Blue told us his tale. And us old cowboy singers, we all sing about it. Wish to God we could have ridden his trail. This cowboy song. It's the end of a 100-year walk, and their voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost. You know, now the old Chisholm Trail's all covered in concrete, and they truck them to market now in 50-foot rigs. They blow by his market, and they never even slow down to reason. Just like living and dying is all he ever did. This is the last cowboy song. It's the end of a 100-year waltz, and their voices sound sad as they're singing. Another piece of America's lost. This is the last cowboy song, and it's the end of a 100-year waltz, and their voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost. Cowboy song.
The last cowboy song. We're losing pieces of America, but one of the things that Backcountry Horseman is doing is to try to help keep part of America's legacy and heritage open. And Jim, let's talk a little bit about the Bill H.R. 5204, and I think that's called the Federal Lands Recreation Act of 2014, and that involves some additional fees and charges, I think, on the public. But you're more familiar with that than I am. If you could talk to us about that.
It's not additional fees; they're current fees, and the FLORIA Act started as a test in 1994 or 96, 94, I think, as a test, and it went well. And it regulates how fees are set, how fees are collected, and how fees are spent. And so the fees are for amenities, varying amenities. There's special amenities and there's regular amenities. So if you take a regular amenity, might be a permanent outhouse, or
right.
Some just kind of a human need, if you will. And so,
right,
the standard amenity, toilets, trash, parking lot, maybe a paved parking lot. Then there's the expanded amenities, and let's say hookups for RVs, maybe a concrete ramp for your boat into the lake. Just extra things that that you don't need to have, if you will, but it's enhanced. So the fees are, you're allowed to place the fees. And in some cases, if you want, if the local forest district or ranger wants to increase a fee at a parking lot, this has to be sometimes a public hearing with the local community, to speak about it. And one example is, it's kind of got us in a bind. Place called Dry Creek, the Backcountry Horseman, especially Larry Wheat, my good friend, and he's chairman of Georgia Backcountry. He designed 26 miles of ecologically approved and archaeologically approved trails. Some were there, but they were kind of, he did a lot of changing. And then when he had the American, the stimulus package anyway, if you're shovel ready, you're into it. So anyway, there's a parking lot there and everything. It's $5 to park in the parking lot. It has a toilet facility and a handicap ramp. Well, it's not horse camp, though. So we said that we would convert a third of it to horses, put up picnic tables, fire rings, because it's not an overnight camp, high lot and stuff for horses. But the Forest Service wants to raise just to $10. It's just a $5 raise a night, And, and you can understand that, you know, and because they have to have a patrol come around at night now. You know, it's a different little bit of expense now. And but they can't do that until this gets approved. And they don't want to do it. So, but to go, so this Floria is getting reauthorized. It would be a 5-year reauthorization. And the latest is, I think, it may be way on into 2015 before this is voted on. And it won't start till January 1st of starting a fiscal year. It would go through December 31st of 2020, and which would be 5 years from the end of 15. But so what they're doing, it covers the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, Fisheries, and Forest Service. So it's got specific language for each one, but the law, but the act, is, covers all four of the big agencies and the Corps of Engineers. So what it does, it says that you can collect, you set your fees, you can collect it. 80% of the fees have to remain and go back to be invested in the area it was collected in.
Okay.
So maybe a ranger. That doesn't have to be that parking lot, but in that ranger district or maybe on that forest, but it's got to stay pretty close to where it was collected. 15% can be used for the cost of collecting money, and then 5% can be used for overhead. To take care of, it's got to be audited and all that. So, it's not new fees. Now, it allows, you know, the mechanism to go ahead and increase fees, but they're generally pretty modest. Now, where the argument comes in with our people and with other people is a couple of things. One is, well, we already pay our taxes. Now, you don't hear that much from the backcountry horse, but you hear from, you know, just horse folks or people in the woods or anybody on the street. Well, we already pay our taxes. Well, yeah, that's true. And there's organizations, the Western Slope for one, and there's that are bitterly opposed to this. They go to Washington. The whole idea of fees, they're bitterly opposed to it. What we are more concerned about is what's called an access fee, and I think your listeners need to be on top of this one, or a bridal fee. That's even worse sounding. But anyway, access fee means to be able to get on a trail, you should pay $5 at a jar right there, or, you know, one of those metal containers, armored containers. Now, we can understand the $5 to park in a paved parking lot that has a permanent toilet type of thing. So, I mean, $5, okay. But it's a whole different thing. So this becomes a right and privilege argument again a little bit. We have the right to be on those public lands without paying $5 to ride a horse. Now, if we want to park a horse trailer in a nice place, we can do that. But the law specifically says they cannot charge for scenic lookouts, for pull-offs along the road, which you can if they're big enough in your horse trailer, for some of these, or a wide place on the gravel road. And so we keep our antenna up for the access fees. And since it's already a law, and, you know, I personally say it's fine. Just my own vote out of 14,000, but we have a mixed bag across the country because we got a mixed bag of, you know, individuals, and so but it's not an increase in fees now because there's a process to increase fees, so they've been going on now for 20 years. So,
well, and it seems like it seems like depending on where you are, there are different fee structures, and. Does this have anything to go back to, for example, the Bryce Canyon situation that came up where they were using concessionaires and I think it was going to be $100 for the first rider and then up to $365 if I can remember correctly.
It was a variation. So right now, if you want to, you know, before this controversy came up, if you were, you know, you flew on an airplane in Salt Lake City and drove out to Bryce and you wanted to ride a horse that day, like you can at, you know, a lot of the parks, with a concessionaire outfitter, day ride or half day ride, you would pay them, and that's part of the whole program. So the National Park Service didn't increase the fees. They just put it on us. The people that live near there that drive ride their own horse, they'll drive their own trailer in, and so that was a kind of a variation of this, and it was, I think, a bit of a stretch. And I think the Park Service thinks it's a bit of a stretch. And so they've rescinded it, and we're going to teach Leave No Trace classes out there, too, for other folks that that may not stay on the trail quite properly. But
right.
That's over well. It's that one, that was a little bit of an oddity. You know, it existed with to place it on us like that was, I don't, it probably wouldn't have stood up if we went further, but they rescinded it after a fair amount. We had really decent discussions with them. Backcountry Horsemen did a real professional job of, you know, not sending, you know, not obscenities in emails, but you know what I mean?
Right.
Emails.
Right.
They were all written out, well thought out. And an interesting thing for all of us that do the Coggins test, that they've also, this is interesting, and I don't know if the other states have this, but if you are a Utah resident and your horse trailer pulls up with Utah plates on it, you do not have to show a Coggins. In a way, you probably don't even need to have one. If you
right.
stay in the state of Utah. Now, if I come in with horses from Colorado, then I got to show. But there's five national parks in Utah, and they, in all this discussion, they decided to accept that no Coggins needed program too. So adopting the state protocol. And I thought that was kind of neat. You know, instead of having another regulation, they took one away. And so that worked out well. I think the thing for you folks to, there's variations, but of fees. One parking lot might be $10, one might be $2, or $5, and some are love or free. But I think there's probably good reasoning, and they're not onerous costs, and you can buy the American Beautiful Pass, and if you're smart enough and old enough, you qualify for the senior pass.
That's good for me to know. But well, I think it. You know, when they present a new bill, or an addition to a bill, or an expansion, or it changes, people's antenna go up, and. You know, the government is, you know, we're running a deficit. It's expensive to keep these areas open. And I guess it's a challenge to get your piece of the pie from the federal budget to take care of those things. And that's one of the big parts that Backcountry Horseman plays in helping provide man hours and manpower to work on these trails and some other organizations that do as well. But I guess my question would be is that if this thing goes through, the fees would be set at the local areas?
Right. Yeah, they're set at the local areas. And let's say it would just go into effect January 1st, just hypothetically. The fees are exactly what they were the day before, you know, December 31st of the old year. So.
Right.
You have to have generally a public announcement that you're going to raise a fee for this area, and it varies a little bit. The Park Service has more latitude. I mean, you got to pay to get into the Yellowstone. You know?
Right.
So pay to get into Grand Teton and some of the other big ones. You don't have to pay it like Smoky Mountain. But they vary from each agency and from each park and each forest. But I think for the folks to, you know, keep their antenna there. Now, if you want to do something about the bill, like I say, you type in the Federal Lands Recreation Enhancement Act 2015 or 14, you need to type 14 or 15, and
right.
It'll take you the current state of the thing, change it. What I would do would be to go to see who's on the House Natural Resources Committee. Rob Bishop is the chairman. Kind of enthusiast outdoorman. He's kind of one of our folks in a way. And if you see who's on it, maybe there's somebody in your state, or it doesn't have to be in your state, but send an email, send a letter, call a staffer. They're really open to, especially if they're in your state or you're in your district, they're really open, but they're very open anyway. And so just alert them to this, you're concerned about it. I think, you know, what not to do is send a form email. I mean, they don't read them.
Right.
You know,
right.
They count them and they got to file them and they got to record them. But if you send out a well thought out one, and if you can find out like the assistants or who's on the staff of Congressman Smith, go just type in Congressman Smith, and it'll say staff, and it may say Betsy Jones is legislative assistant, and Betsy.Jones at the mail .house.gov, and
right.
So you can send it. And it'd be surprised the response you get. You'd probably get an answer. So
okay. Well, that's good information to know. And I guess the other thing is, too, is that people need to connect with what's going on in their area and be aware of opportunities to have your input when they have these discussions about fees and the different things that pertain to where you're interested in riding, where your interests are, your local areas as well. And what's the best way, Jim, for people to be able to keep up with that?
Well, a couple of things. You can go to, let's say you live next to a national forest or a national park, but you go to the website for that forest.
Okay.
Or the website for the national website for the U.S. Forest. And it tells you which forests are going to be having a land management plan. Now, that's really important. That's much more important than raising the fee for $5 to $10 because you can close horse trails, you can close trailheads. And so you want to be on top of it there. They do about every 10 or 15 years, but it takes 3 or 4 years to do one because you have to have all this, the environmental impact analysis, all that. But the best thing to do is if you're next to a national forest, is drive to one of the district offices and go in and say, hey, share a cup of coffee when they got to. They're busy people, but they just talk to them and say, this is Johnny Mary Smith. We'd love to talk to you, and is there any way we can help? But it's to get in front, because once the plan starts going, the ball starts rolling, it's hard to push it back up the hill again. And,
right.
So get out in front. You go to our website. There'll be places it'll say, you go to our website, and it'll take you to the National Park Service, the Forest Service, where they issue these, what's going on. Because they're very good. They're much better than state parks because they really have to get public notice.
Well, as always, I think the big thing is if you're interested and you're concerned, kind of keep up with what's going on in your area and get involved and do it beforehand and not wait till that ball's rolling downhill, because it's hard to stop it and hard to push it back when that happens. And
sometimes
impossible to. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jim, you are always a great guest with tremendous information, and I hope this has been helpful for folks today. And you're on a little bit earlier in a different show, and I appreciate very much you taking the time, because I know you're en route back from Washington now. So thanks for taking the time to join us.
I pulled over, then I had to drive a little bit to get three bars on my 5-bar phone.
Well, we appreciate you very much. You'd be safe traveling the rest of the way home.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Always glad to talk with you.
All right,
you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jim. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, that is our good friend Jim McGarvey, who is the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. Always great information, and we appreciate Jim, and we appreciate the work that BCHA does to help keep these trails open and help preserve that heritage that we have to be able to get out and ride on the trails. Good show. I've enjoyed talking with Mickey today. Such a sweet young lady. And we'd encourage you to visit her website, MickeyDaniel.com. Check out her book, Girls and Gunsmoke, and it should be a good read. And then the CD, her album, Gotta Be a Cowgirl, is just a fun album with some really great songs on there. So we appreciate Mickey joining us on the show, and we appreciate Jim, as always, being part of Equestrian Legacy Radio. I want to mention briefly that we have a legacy club for our friends and our listeners, and that is free, and that entitles you to some great discounts from our legacy club sponsors, And when you join the Legacy Club, you're automatically enrolled in our monthly and year-end drawing for some great prizes from our Legacy Club sponsors. And for the month of September, we have Camp with Horses that's providing a tremendous savvy Highline horse system. So we'll be giving that away at the end of the month, and you can visit our website, equestrianlegacy.net. Join our Legacy Club. It's free, and visit the sponsors, and they all offer great discounts to our club members, as well as special offers just for the Legacy Club members. So a good show today. We look forward to having you join us on Tuesday for Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. We're going to be doing some chuck wagon cooking, and we're going to be talking about a ride for St. Jude's Hospital. And then join us next Thursday as we come back with Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe. We hope you've enjoyed the show. And as always, we remind you, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for joining us.
There came an early snow. There's been a hoot owl howling by my window now for six nights in a row. She's coming for me, I know. And on wildfire, we're both gonna go. We'll be right. We'll be riding wild.
Hey, Chattanooga. Did you know that you can pick up items that you order from Walmart.com at your local Walmart neighborhood market? It's quick and easy. Shop Walmart's everyday low prices on over a million eligible items from Walmart.com and have them shipped to the store for free. Save time and money on things like toys, electronics, and gifts. Just order online and pick up in-store. Shopping is now more convenient than ever. Walmart Neighborhood Market, your local grocery store at Walmart Supercenter prices.